Hello again, everybody, and welcome again to another edition of Express Yourself with T. Ramon and Skull. I'm Tim Turner, along with co-host Roscoe Nance. We're here for what we think will be a really good hour of sports talk and just chopping up things from the going around in the sports world. We know that the NFL has gotten off to a really rocky start, where we think pretty much the Red Cross has nothing on the NFL this week with the injuries that have been taken out there. Drew Brees is out for an extended period of time with a bad thumb. He had surgery on that. Ben Roethlisberger, damaged tendon in his elbow. He is done for the year. The Steelers season may be finished before it even got started. You had Monday night game where there were at least 10 Eagles sidelined with injuries through the game, and they were Carson Wentz didn't have any weapons, which probably led to the Eagles losing at Atlanta Monday night. And that was it seems like it's a big mash unit. And then there were other things that were going on in the NFL with Daniel Jones replacing Eli in New York. And now then we're going to go over to college football, where this weekend the center of a college football world will be between the hedges up in Athens when number 3 Georgia takes on number 7 Notre Dame. So a lot was going on. A lot is about to go on. And we're going to chop those things up, but we're going to have with us later as our guest, the gentleman whose voice you hear every week on Express Yourself with T. Ramon and Skull on the intro, veteran and legendary sports broadcaster Charlie Neal. He'll be with us after a while. But Roscoe, how you doing, sir?
Oh, I'm doing great, Tim. Doing great. Looking forward to a great show with Charlie Neal, one of the legends of the media, the king of black college sports commentating, the fame. I call him the fame, the king, the prince. He's been there, done that. He's seen it all, been around, and it's just great to have him on. He's such a wealth of knowledge and experience, and he's such a versatile and well-rounded guy, too, that, you know, people don't know all the many facets of Charlie Neal, I'll put it that way. Yep, so I'm looking forward to, you know, kicking it around with him. And you mentioned the NFL and the Steelers in their season being done before it even got started. That is a real blow to them, because it was going to be difficult for them to begin with, even with a healthy Roethlisberger. But just given the lay of the land in that division, everybody was on the Cleveland bandwagon, but me, and I still saw it as a very competitive division with probably Baltimore being the favorite, and Pittsburgh competing, and Cleveland also in the mix. So right now, I think it's Baltimore's to win. I really do.
Absolutely. I don't see where Cincinnati factors in at all, and the Steelers are out of it, so it's going to be between Cleveland and Baltimore. And Lamar Jackson, through the first couple of weeks of the season, has proven to be more than just a guy who just runs the ball. He can throw it around the yard, and he can make great decisions and make great plays throughout. And we're going to get with that, but we wanted to, you know, getting back to what you said earlier about Charlie Neal. And legendary. I just know that back when I was covering the SWAC early on in the mid-'80s, and BET was a different BET than it is now, you couldn't wait for those Saturday games where you're going to have Charlie and Lim Barney together calling the games. And they elevated the profile of HBCU football. And we're going to bring Charlie on in a second here. He's just an outstanding guy, legend in HBCU sports, and just a legendary broadcaster. Charlie, are you with us, sir?
No, this is Ricky.
Oh, Ricky.
So, Ricky, can you?
We have our producer, Ricky Hampton, on. I got the wrong
number.
So,
Ricky, can
here.
You do an impersonation of Charlie?
Do Charlie impersonation.
No, I'm not touching that. He's a legend, man. No, I'm just checking you guys out. I tell you what, text me and I will check in with Charlie to make sure he's coming aboard.
Yes, so we'll do
that. But I'm with you on the Steelers, man. It's over.
You know, and interestingly enough, this is kind of similar to what happened with Ben Roethlisberger. He suffered, I believe it was an elbow injury that ended his career. I'm not saying, Terry Bradshaw, I'm not saying that this is going to end Roethlisberger's career by any stretch, but it just reminded me of that.
For sure, yeah, it did. Absolutely, it's very reminiscent of that. And I think Ben is talking retirement. A lot of guys are talking retirement this week, where Adam Vinatieri's had two really bad weeks for the Indianapolis Colts, and he was thinking, he says now he has demons in his head, and the guy's been pretty reliable. I think he's 46 years old. He's been around forever. He's got championship rings with the Patriots, and I think with the Colts as well. And he's been a solid kicker throughout. I just need him to have one more really awful week. Then he could have a great season, because my Atlanta Falcons are at Indianapolis on Sunday. So,
Tim.
So once we get past that.
Tim.
Huh?
Yes, Tim.
Sir. Yes, sir.
give it up. Give it up.
We'll see. If we get beat by Jacoby Brissett in a banged up Ty Hilton, we get what we deserve. But we, you're talking about, you got college football, HBCU football, particularly. We had some pretty big games over the weekend, but this kind of was the cleanup part of the season, where conference play really starts in earnest this week, doesn't it?
Yes, it does, and but still, there's that big, big matchup that you alluded to earlier, between the hedges with Georgia and Notre Dame. That's going to be very, very interesting. I think Georgia feels like they're due, to win and win big, and not just this weekend, but over in January, top national championship. So this will be a big, big game for them, because no matter what's going on with Notre Dame, anytime you can knock off the Fighting Irish, that raises your profile.
Absolutely, it does. And I don't know why. I mean, the highest paid people on campus at Notre Dame need to be their marketing and PR people, especially in their sports information department, because these Notre Dame teams are no great shakes and haven't been for years, yet they always seem to land in the top 10. They always seem to be vying for a national championship, and they play nobody. They pick their schedule. They get to pick who they want to. They're a quasi-ACC team. And, I just don't understand why the nation is still enamored with the legend. Newt Rock is not walking through that door. I just don't see it, and I really look for it to be a really lopsided Georgia blowout of the Fighting Irish there in Athens on Saturday night.
Well, that may well be the case, but you give the Irish their due, and they seem to be able to, for whatever reason, come up, with that supreme effort, every now and again, and when they really need it. And I guess that's part of their legend, that the luck of the Irish, and when they need a big one, they somehow manage to win one for the Gipper. That's part of it. It's not, sometimes it's not who you beat or how you beat them, but it's when you beat them, and
that's surely what's going to happen this with this game being so early in the season, because it's going to be Georgia, say Georgia takes a loss and breezes through the rest of the regular season And then the light at the end of the tunnel in Atlanta in the first weekend of December is University of Alabama. Very well, you get two losses, and your season essentially is over in December. And you're playing for one of those other bowls on New Year's Day. And the same thing could be for Notre Dame. So either you take your hat off to these teams that schedule these Power 5 and plus Notre Dame games early in the season to attest their mettle, but it may not serve them well down the line.
Well, you know, and really, you know, that's how championships are won. You know, scheduling. It's all about scheduling. Playing the right teams at the right time and avoiding certain teams and that kind of thing. You beat a good team early on, then you line up some cupcakes and you pick off another decent team here and there, and you come into November, December, 9-0, 10-0, whatever, and you're championship water.
Absolutely.
Whether you really are or not.
There are just so many great teams out there and great games to be played. And to see this one come up so soon is something pretty special. And I think for a lot of Georgia people, it's going to bring back a tad of nostalgia, because I think it was 2 years ago in South Bend, Indiana, when Georgia beat Notre Dame up there. That was when Jake Fromm started his legend. Where he was a freshman, and then he beat Notre Dame, and the confidence grew from there, and it took Georgia to the championship game where they lost an OT to Alabama. So that's going to be interesting to see how they respond in this, because I understand I have a son that's in Athens, and he's coming. He's leaving town because, from what they're understanding, the size of Athens, Georgia, is going to be quadruple. I'm sorry, man, it's going to triple in size on Saturday with so many folks coming in for the game. And that's going to be something that's going to be super interesting to see as we live close enough where there are going to be people coming through town here. So it's going to be an interesting couple of days there. But we're going to probably try to just break off and talk about more HBCU football and talk about just the legend we have on the line right now, who's joining us as our guest, a guy who I just continually – have revered over the years for the quality of his work and just, living for those Saturdays in the old days of BET, where he and Lynn Barney would be on a site somewhere doing HBCU football and bringing elevating the profile of HBCU football back in the early 80s and in the 90s. We have with us right now Charlie Neal. Charlie, are you there, sir?
Yes, indeed. How is everybody this evening?
Oh, we're doing good, King Charles, and I see that your voice is in fine form.
How you guys doing? Great to
be
with
you. We're doing
great.
Doing great. How have you been?
I can't complain. Another season's upon us, and things are going good for some people, and other people are struggling a little bit.
So, what's your take on the season? How it's gone so far? After the first handful of weeks?
Well, when you look at all the conferences as far as the HBCUs are concerned, I think the one surprise has been South Carolina State. A lot of people really didn't expect the Bulldogs to do as well as they did starting out the gate. Of course, it's going to be interesting to see what happens when they go into conference play. But I just think that the Bulldogs and Buddy Pough, because a lot of people didn't even think Buddy Pough was going to be back this year, and the fact that he's back and they're doing very well is a tribute to his ability to rally a team and get them to do what they need to be doing, because they'd struggle a little bit. But this is a team, we look at what they've been able to do the first couple weeks, their defense is what's kept them alive. And this is nothing new in terms of when you look back at the history, what has been indicative of the Bulldogs of the South Carolina State to do what they've been able to do. So that's going to be very interesting.
Well, that's what I was going to say, that, you know, the staple of South Carolina State teams over the years has been strong defense, solid running game, and solid offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
And those mm-hmm. things seem to be in place. And, you know, you give Buddy that combination, and he can get some things done.
No question. No question about it. And that's very, very important. And, you know, I think they're off this week. I'm not sure, but I don't think they have a game. I think them and A&T both have a week off this weekend, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
So with that being said, you know, sometimes this week allows you to get healed, especially playing the so-called big boys, the FBS schools and things of this nature, and you come back down to reality, get yourself ready, especially going into conference play the rest of the way.
Right, right. And talking about South Carolina State, the other thing, too, is you know, they have a quarterback who can make some plays, you know,
in
the pocket, Tyrese Nick. So that gives them another dimension.
Yes, it does.
More dangerous. Yeah.
Yeah, he's done a fantastic job for them, you know, throughout the season, and that, you know, has probably been one of the reasons that they've had the success that they've had is his play. They've had some pretty decent quarterbacks over the years, but you know, he is going to make a difference this year. Then they have a pretty good receiver, a kid named DeMontrezl Burroughs. You know, mm-hmm. he's been playing very well for them. Yeah,
right.
As a receiver.
Right.
So,
but that said, it's still.
But Charlie,
like,
I want to go back in the stack for a hot second here. I know I had a call or a text already to me asking about the early pairings of the days of BET, and just how did you and Lynn Barney get together on the broadcast? Because that seems like it was just the perfect pairing.
Well, that is so interesting that you asked that. When BET started to do football was back in 1980 with Bob Johnson, put the network together. I didn't know Bob from the Man in the Moon, and Bob contacted me and said, "Hey, listen, I'm putting together a black network, TV network, and we're going to feature some HBCU schools and doing sports, and we'd like you to be our main hosts for these games and play-by-play." So I said, no problem, because at the time I was living in Detroit. I used to do and worked in Detroit, and I used to do the Detroit Lions game. So that's how I met Lynn Barney, knew Lynn Barney, and all the guys, Charlie Sanders and Ray Jarvis and the old-time school players, Mel Farr, all those guys. I used to do the games when they were playing with the Lions. And so when Bob says, we're going to start, it was like I met him in the summer or June or July of 1980, and he said, we're going to start up in September. So he said, how about an analyst? Well, Bob was looking at Roy Jefferson, who played with the Redskins, because Bob was living in Washington, D.C., so he
right.
had a familiarization with Roy Jefferson. And I said, well, I've got a guy who played at Jackson State, played at an HBCU, who I have a good relationship with. He had just retired from the Detroit Lions. I said, how about Lynn Barney? He said, whatever you want. And that's how it all started. We were together 22, 23 years, I believe it was. If we were not the longest, we may have been the second longest broadcast team beside Madden and Summerall that was out there in terms
wow.
of years and longevity. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And you guys had quite a chemistry as well.
We really did work very, very well together. I mean, Lim was so funny. The only times that I don't say it was anything negative, but whenever time we did a Jackson State game, I had to put a parachute on it, because just in case he jumped out the booth, if they did something good, he would have something. He would be able to land softly, you know. So, but other than that, we did. We had some great times together. In fact, we were together this past February down in Atlanta at the Black College Football Hall of Fame. And, you know, anytime we get together, it was like we haven't missed a beat. It was just like yesterday. You know, we may not see each other for a year or two, you know, but when we get together, it's like nothing has changed. This is like the old days. I mean, and we used to have some fun. We had some great laughs out there. You know, he would sometimes had me laughing so hard I couldn't even call the play or call the next play coming up. And I would take the headset off because I didn't want the viewing audience to know what was going on. And he would say to the audience, My partner's having some technical difficulties with his mic. It wasn't any technical difficulties. I just wasn't able to say anything because he had me laughing. I had tears coming out of my eyes. I mean, we had a mm-hmm. lot of fun together. Had a lot of fun together.
Well,
yeah.
Talking about, you know, changes, how has Black College football changed, you know, not only on the playing field but in the presentation and exposure over the years?
Well, of course, the exposure is the one thing. If you remember, and you know Roscoe as well as anyone, back in the day, and we're talking even back when BET started in 1980 and those years before that, you might get one HBCU game on TV a year if you got that much. And that was maybe ABC would carry one game, and normally it was like somebody like Grambling and somebody like that, you know, because they had recognition, name recognition back then. And that's all the exposure that they got. BET from 80 to 2005 basically were the only people that gave HBCUs any exposure. And then, of course, in 2004, BET stopped doing sports. They just decided not to do it at all. In 2005, ESPNU comes along. They launch ESPNU. And one of the first things, the staple for ESPNU, when they first started in 1980, were HBCU schools. The first ever game on ESPNU, I did it, and it was Morehouse and Benedict. And that was J.D. Washington was playing for, that was Denzel Washington's son was playing for Morehouse at that particular time. That was the first ever game on BET. I did that game with a guy named Kelly Stauffer. Kelly was a quarterback in college and played a little bit in the NFL. And we did the Thursday night games on BET, and that was the kickoff. I mean, on ESPNU, that was the kickoff for ESPNU. And they did a number of HBCU games during those formidable years of ESPNU. Of course, nobody knew anything about ESPNU. It was new. And so they reached out to the SIAC, the SWAC, the MEAC, the CIAA, and we did a huge amount of games over the first 2-3 years of HBCUs. And they were on 2-3 times a week. You know, it wasn't just me doing the games also. I mean, they had other announced teams that they were doing, but they did on a tremendous amount of games, which gave great exposure to HBCU programs at that particular time. The Albany States got on TV, the Fort Valleys, you know, Tuskegee, Fayetteville State, Elizabeth City, you know, schools that would not traditionally get any TV exposure was getting TV exposure. Lane College, yeah, I mean, I did some of those games at those facilities. So I remember all too well how that part of it changed and the exposure. And, of course, technology has helped. You see what the MEAC is doing this year in terms of live streaming all of their conference games. You know, the home teams are responsible for it. And you're seeing more and more exposure coming that way. And that was the one thing that HBCUs was missing for so many years. And I know not only from a football standpoint of view, but from a basketball standpoint of view. I remember doing a lot. If you remember, Virginia Union was on top in terms of basketball during those years in the 80s. And there was a kid named A.J. English played for Virginia Union. And I remember Wes Unseld, I believe, at the time was, I don't know if he was just the coach of the Washington Wizards or Bullets at that time, but he said the reason he brought A.J. English to camp was because he saw him on BET. So we know that a lot of those, that exposure helped tremendously what BET did, even what ESPNU did going forward from 2005 up to today.
Well, ESPN itself starting the network in and of itself, they used to have a Saturday morning wrap-up, HBCU wrap-up, in its early stages, and it was like they were mimicking what you guys were doing, even then when they're trying to build an audience.
Yes, they were trying to build an audience. And, of course, once that audience built and everybody, the Southeast Conference, the ACC, the Mid-American, the OVC, the Southland, the Southern, everybody saw what was happening, and they wanted to get on board. And then all of a sudden the sponsors started coming in, and they were able to sell time and spots. And it took them about 5 years to for people to really recognize them and for people to be able to pick them up, because, of course, they weren't in all the households that the granddaddy ESPN itself was in. But, again, eventually, you know, it has grown into what it is today. And now it's gone into even more with ESPN3 and ESPN Plus and all the whole, you know, that whole family of networks and, that ESPN has going for it.
Well, Charlie, what I find interesting is that, you know, in the early days, Thursday Night Football was the exclusive territory for HBCUs.
It certainly was. It certainly was.
And now... And now that's
everybody,
not the case.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, you know, if you, I did, like I said, when the ESPNU started Thursday night, every Thursday we had. In fact, what I was doing one year, I did 22 football games one year. I did a Thursday night game. I did a Saturday game. A Thursday, Saturday, Thursday, Saturday, Thursday, Saturday. And the majority of those games, not every one of them, but the majority of those games were HBCU games. You know, and we would even have double headers on Thursday night. You know, they still have double headers on Thursday night, but we'd have an HBCU game on maybe as the early game and maybe a West Coast school or somebody. We even had HBCU games. I know they did it in basketball on Monday night. Monday night was HBCU night on ESPNU in terms of basketball. They'd have a MEAC game on at 7 o'clock and they'd have a SWAC game on at 9 o'clock because of the hour time difference. For most of the SWAC schools, they were in a central time zone. So they would have an early game on Monday night that would feature, let's say, Howard and Delaware State. And then that night there'd be Jackson State and Mississippi Valley, you know. And so that was, it wasn't just, like I said, football. Basketball also ruled Monday night. And the HBCUs ruled Thursday night. And so that was great. But now everybody wanted to get on Thursday night. You know, so when you have success, and I can tell this story quickly because I remember even when BET started, there were schools who were very skeptical about signing an agreement to be televised by ESPN. By BET. BET wasn't paying this big money and exclusive rights and rights fees and all that to these schools to broadcast those games. And so there were some schools that would say, well, we're not getting anything, and, you know, what are they getting out of it? You know how sometimes we can be our own worst enemies as African Americans. And they were not trustworthy of what BET was doing at the time. They didn't even want to be involved. 2 years down the road, they're calling saying, well, y'all, why don't you do one of our games, you know? That same school that had an opportunity to be on the bandwagon at day one, and they didn't take advantage of it. And then all of a sudden they realized that BET was a viable entity and could give their school some added exposure, and all of a sudden they want to get on board. And so those are the types of things that you dealt with back then in the early days. But like I said, you know, once something is successful, whether it be BET, ESPNU, whatever, once people realize it can help you promote your school, your program, and what you have to offer, and let a kid who's in, you know, Podunk, Mississippi decide, this is where I want to go to school because I saw them on TV. And I know a lot of college kids that went to colleges or went to HBCUs because of exposure that they saw either on BET or even now on ESPNU.
Right, right. Well,
you're talking about how you guys did back
in the
day.
Let's talk about BET and one of the groundbreaking shows on BET, the Budweiser Sports Report. I mean,
yes, indeed.
That was truly a groundbreaking venture and kind of the forerunner of ESPN's Sports Report.
The Sports Report, it certainly was. In fact, it's kind of ironic because Nicole Watson, who was very instrumental in putting that together for BET, eventually left BET and went to work for ESPN and put together that Sports Reporter show. But the Budweiser Sports Report was a weekly show that we had sports guys like Dave Dupree, yourself, James Brown, what's the kid's name from Roy Johnson. We would just sit around and talk about sports, things that was going on in the world of sports, especially as it related to African Americans. It wasn't just HBCU schools. We dealt with the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, tennis, golf, you know, whatever it may have been related to sports. And it was a fantastic show. Budweiser, you know, put their name behind it when we got it going. And it was a very, very, very successful show in the early days of BET. In fact, every now and then I have some, somehow I found some clips of some of the old shows that sometimes, you know, and the one thing that's probably most disturbing about BET today, and not BET in itself, but they did not do a good job of archiving old games and shows like that, because I get calls all the time or emails or texts from people who played, you did my game in 1986, and we played so-and-so. Do you have that copy? Unless I just happen to have had a copy of it, that's the only way it exists, or if you happen to tape it at that particular time. Because they let that, all of that stuff, which is history. I say history. I mean, I did Eddie Robinson's game when he broke Bear Bryant's record down at the State Fair Classic, when they played Prairie View in Dallas, Texas. I did that game. Why don't we have that? Well, we could, you know, see, those are the types of things that what I say is disappointing, that they were not able to hold on to that.
But believe it or not, that show is still well remembered, and people come up to me even now, you know, what, 30 years or so later, and still
mm-hmm.
Talk about those shows.
Oh, no question. Yes.
Like it was just, you know, last year.
You're right. You're right.
Yeah.
You're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct, Roscoe.
Yeah.
But even when thinking back in those days, you guys were as instrumental in giving the guys exposure on a wider level than anybody. I'm thinking more so when you mentioned Mississippi Valley, and I know you did the Jerry Rice, Willie Totten teams back in the day. And
sure.
How you pretty much helped propel them into to stardom, essentially.
Well, you know, you say, you know, they propelled themselves because they had the ability. But the fact that we were able to give them exposure where coaches, the Bill Walshes of the world, could see what Jerry Rice had to offer out there, and what some of these other players we've done over the years, whether, like I said, whether it be football or basketball, basically that's what we covered, those high-profile sports. And it's nice that I feel or people have felt that I've had some part in that, and I think that's one of the reasons that I've been, you know, able to be inducted into the Black College Football Hall of Fame, just because of being able to give people give that type of exposure and let people see Jerry Rice in his heyday and the greatest show on earth at that particular time. And I, you know, people ask me all the time, you know, what are some of the greatest games I remember? And I always talk about a game between Southern and Mississippi Valley, you know, where they came back after being down at halftime and wound up winning, putting 63 points on the board for the whole game. And, you know, when you watched the Mississippi Valley team, it was like, you know, I don't care that during those heydays, it was like, we don't care what your team does, but when we get the ball back, we're going to score. You do whatever you're going to do, but when we get it back, we're going to score. And that was the way it was. And it was like, I remember that particular game because in the second half, they put all those points on the board, and none of the scoring drives took over a minute. It was like, we got the kickoff or we got the ball back, whether you punt it or whatever it was, and then boom, 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 touchdown. Boom, 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 touchdown. Boom. And then they had a running back named Carl Byram. Most people don't remember this.
Tank.
This is a kid that gained over 1,000 yards. And
right.
They would say, when did they give him the ball? You know, because you had you had Jerry Rice, you had a guy named Curtis DeBart-Laban, you had those type of guys out there catching 80, 70, 80 balls. They were catching 70, 80. Jerry Rice was over 100. And then this kid that I was just talking about, the running back, wound up going to the NFL himself. Well, I think he went to the Buffalo Bills. So, I mean, it was a great show. And we couldn't, you know, it was just exciting to know you were as an announcer, that I was going to go see Mississippi Valley this way. I was just as excited as the fans, you know, to go broadcast
right.
The game.
Yeah. But the thing that I remember about those Valley teams, in Jerry Rice in particular, is that the exact same things that you saw him do at Valley, he did
mm-hmm.
in the NFL.
He did in the NFL,
you know,
against top-notch. Right. Mm-hmm.
Just running away from people. Running away from people. You know, just,
yeah.
It was,
catch
it
the
was
ball,
amazing.
And he was gone. He was gone. You're right. You're exactly right. He was just a fantastic talent. I mean, they talk about great receivers. And I'm not just talking about in terms of the college or HBCUs. I'm talking about in terms of it of all time in professional sports and just receivers in general. And Jerry Rice has got to be in the top two or three.
Yeah. And the amazing thing about it, you know, you, like me, you know, we were there, you know, on the ground floor, and I know I had no idea what I was looking at. I mean, I knew that he was good. I knew that he was going to be an NFL player.
Mm-hmm.
But
oh, you remember
that?
You remember you. Go ahead, Josh. Go ahead.
You know, not the greatest of all time. The only person, and I don't know if he really knew it, who saw that was Archie Cooley.
Oh, yeah.
I think he was lying when he said it. You know,
yeah.
Because
yeah.
He, you know, you talk about the master of hype, but you know, he said
mm-hmm.
that, I remember
mm-hmm.
he said that Jerry's freshman year that Jerry was going to be the best receiver to come through SWAT, you know, better than Willie Richardson, better than Otis
right,
Taylor.
Right.
You know,
right.
How can anybody be better than
you
that?
You weren't going to believe that, right, right.
No.
Yeah, that's like saying, you know, this guy's going to be a better running back than Walter Payton, you know. I'm,
right.
You know, same thing. But you remember the game at the Mississippi Stadium between
right.
Mississippi Valley and Alcorn that year
right.
with Isaac
right.
Holt. And Jerry
right.
Rice, I mean, what a game, right?
Right.
Sold out
65,000 people.
65,000 people on a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
They didn't play it on a
yeah.
Saturday. I think they played it on a Sunday, if
Sunday
I remember
afternoon.
Correctly.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
Yeah.
That was
yeah.
a tremendous game, a tremendous, tremendous
mm-hmm.
game.
You probably were there covering it.
I was.
Okay,
and,
see?
I mean, you know, it was just, it's indescribable, and it wasn't just, I mean, it was just football fans, not SWAC fans,
right?
Not
right.
black college football fans, but,
right.
you know, fans of all ilk, you know.
No question.
You know, the governor, William Winter, the governor of the state,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Lamar Hunt from the Kansas City Chiefs. He was down on Alcorn's sideline with Cam.
Right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, just all kinds of people.
No, you couldn't have asked for a better showing. I mean, you know, we talk about the Bayou Classic because that was a tradition every year, and you talk about some of these other classics that they've had over the years, the State Fair Classic in Dallas and the Magic City Classic in Birmingham every year, and some of the other classics that we've seen over the years. But that one game, that one game was one will always stand out.
That was such a classic matchup. I mean, Alcorn was number one in the nation in defense, Valley number one in the nation
in
offense. Then you had the individual matchups, Ike Holt versus Jerry Rice, and then you had the, you know, Kasem versus Cooley, because Cooley had worked for Kasem, and, you know, Kasem, the defensive mastermind, Cooley, the offensive genius, and
Dennis Thomas was coaching the defense at the time. He was the defensive coordinator.
And his brother was the defensive coordinator for Valley.
Right. I mean, so it was crazy, you know. I kid people, I said Alcorn's defense was called the tunnel defense. You go in the tunnel, but you wouldn't come out. You know,
and then not only that, you just had the natural rivalry between Valley and
Mississippi
Alcorn.
Two Mississippi schools. There were three schools there between Alcorn, Jackson, and Valley. You know, anytime any one of those was playing each other, especially during that time, because all three were powerhouses in the conference. All three were powerhouses in the conference at that time.
And Valley was kind of the new kid on the block, and they were, you know, fighting, you know, for their place at the table, and you know, Cooley, I'll never forget at his press conference when he was hired, they had it in Jackson, and Cooley came in with his bravado, and he called coaches out by name. Eddie, make room for Valley at the top. Gordon, make room for Valley at the top. Kasem, make room for Valley at the top. And, you know, he scratched
the ball.
He was a prophet.
He backed it up, didn't he?
He sure did.
He backed it up. Right.
I need both of you gentlemen to settle something for me.
Go ahead.
I need y'all to settle something for me. I arrived in Jackson right after that game, and I had an opportunity to interview Jerry Rice, and I made mention of Ike Holt shutting him down. And for the next 10 minutes, Jerry Rice explained to me how Ike Holt did not shut him down. He was very adamant and angry about that. But how did that matchup go? Because you guys did mention that.
Go ahead, Roscoe.
What happened was Ike Holt played him man-to-man, but they always had a man over the top. So he wasn't one-on-one. He wasn't one-on-one with Jerry. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, too, that enabled my way of thinking is that what really won that game for Alcorn was their offense and their ability to run the ball. Perry Qualls, running back, he had, like, I believe 212 yards rushing, and Richard Miles, an unsung quarterback, he had a big game, and I think the final score was something like 42-28, and the final score came on Ike Holt pick six. It was a lot of strategy involved in that, and but Alcorn's total the secondary, I mean, they had some outstanding guys in that secondary besides Milton Mack, Eric Moon.
Right.
They call them the Soul Patrol defense. Ike Holt, you know, he was General Ike, and Eric Moon, the safety, you know, he was kind of the brains of the outfit, and they called him, you know, the commander, and they just had a good scheme, but it wasn't so much as Ike Holt shutting him down. Now, he was an outstanding defender, no doubt about it. He
had
size like 6'2", 200 pounds, a big cornerback, and he could get down and cover you. He would cover you.
And no question. He was fantastic, you know?
Yeah.
He was fantastic.
And during that time, Alcorn was kind of the defensive back, the SWAT, you know, because they had guys like the ones that I mentioned, Elbert Bowles and Roy Young, who went on to have an outstanding career with the Eagles, and Willie Alexander, who played for the Oilers, and Jenkins, Rayford Jenkins. They had some outstanding defensive backs over the years.
Yeah. In fact, I think Holtz finished the year with, his career with 24 interceptions, which I think at the time was a 1AA record.
Right.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, you know. And I think with Jerry Rice,
he was outstanding. I think Milton Mack went on to have a career with the Saints.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I think Holt went with the Vikings at the
right.
start of his career, wasn't it? Yeah.
He was part of that Herschel Walker trade.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
With Dallas. Yeah. But he was quite a DB. A lot of skills.
Yes, he did have a lot of skills.
Well, Charlie, thanks so much for joining us this evening.
Well, no problem. Always a pleasure talking to you guys, and thanks for having me. And we'll be talking, I'm sure, down the road somewhere.
Good enough. And take care and have a good
thanks, Charlie.
Thank you. You all have a good evening. Bye now.
The legend. That's legendary right there.
You know, and I feel remiss because we didn't get into Charlie Neal, the person. I mean, other things that he's involved in other than, his broadcast career. I mean, well, I guess this is sort of a broadcast career. But he was a DJ also. And he also is involved with officiating, and he... like a sheriff's deputy, I think in Arlington County in Virginia.
Right.
He's just a man of all seasons. Quite a guy.
All around solid guy. But it surprises me not that he was a disc jockey. No one has pipes like he does. Nobody.
Right. And he has this gift of gab that, you know, the jive talk that he would use on his DJ show. And, we needed to have gotten him to run that down. I mean, it's a hoot, the things that he would say. I wish that I could capture it for the audience, but I'm not able to. Only he can do that.
I hear you on that. The man, he started the interest in HBCU football around there, and it's going strong, irrespective of it. Seems like it may be a watered down project, a product of what it is now, but there's still some great sports, great games going on in football and basketball, and there are great games this weekend. When you had like a big one out of the SWAC with Jackson State, finally snapped that streak against Texas, Tennessee State in the Heritage Classic, when they knocked off Tennessee State 49-44 Saturday night. That had to take a big monkey off the bat. It makes it seem as if Jackson State may be for real this year.
Well, I'm not going to go as far as to say all that, but anytime Jackson State can beat Tennessee State, it's huge because of the history between those schools that goes back to the Big John Merritt era when he led Jackson State to its, first black college national championship and a big victory in the Orange Blossom Classic against Florida A&M. And then he bolted to Tennessee State and took several Jackson State players with them, some of whom ended up having to come back to Jackson State. But Jacksonians, the old heads, they still remember that, and they feel like all of the accolades, all of the accomplishments, all of the national championships, and all of everything that has come to Tennessee State over the years is rightfully theirs. That
right.
Big John, you know, absconded north with, I guess, their birthright, their heritage, their legacy, their tradition, or whatever you want to call it, and they just have never, ever really gotten over that all these years later. But that's life, and that's what makes – and really those kinds of things what makes, you know, college football, and especially black college football, so interesting, so exciting, and so competitive because – you know, we have long memories. We never forget. We never forget.
And sometimes those stories even get better as the years go by, and details are added as the years go by.
Oh, never let the truth get in the way of a good story.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like I said, that was a – but that, and I'm sure that people will be talking about that TSU-Jackson State game, and maybe even more so people will talk about the A&M-North Alabama game where – A&M picked up a check and a victory at Florence when they beat when they won by 7, 31-24 over North Alabama, which is generally one of the more solid teams in the FCS.
Right. And there was a bit of controversy surrounding that game, so much so to the point that Coach Connell Maynard says that this was the last year of a 2-year contract, and he says that A&M shouldn't be interested in playing North Alabama going forward because how shabbily they were treated at Braley Stadium. That they had some problems. This is according to Maynard, that they had some problems with complimentary tickets and their allotment of tickets to sell to fans, and that the coaches. Access to the press box elevators was delayed so fans could, have access. And there was an incident where one of the security guards said something to a coach or coaches and had his hand on his pistol saying, did you hear what I said? And things like that.
Wow.
Of course, North Alabama officials are denying that incident happened, but it's just unfortunate that there is even a hint of that kind of thing going on, and I guess really the unfortunate part about it is that when you hear things like that, because let's face it, because it is Alabama, even though this is the 21st century. And because of the climate of the times, it sounds believable.
Right.
Because of the reputation of Alabama has gained over the years, and in a lot of ways has outgrown a lot of that stuff, but then a lot of stuff still goes on. And when you hear things like that, and when you look at it in light of things that go on in other places, not just in Alabama, it's believable.
Yeah, but it's always accentuated when it's in the South. I mean, they're just
right, exactly.
elsewhere in the nation. But the minute you mention Mississippi, Alabama, or Georgia, people lose their minds as if it's amplified in some way. But it is actually no worse. But
if it happens in Indiana, it's terrible. If it happens
right.
in Alabama, it's the worst thing in life.
Exactly.
That's the way that it is. That's the way that it is. And, like I said, it's just unfortunate.
But the ray of sunshine in that is them coming away with that victory. But and it seems like the teams in the MEAC across the board were not as fortunate, except for A&T, of course, which knocked off Charleston Southern 27-21. So A&T continues to slay these teams who played them early in the season.
Well, A&T is on to something. They have a kicking game.
Which is generally neglected at HBCU.
Right. Noah Ruiz, I think did he have three field goals? He was like three.
I think so, yes, sir.
And that's big. That's big. And earlier in the season, he had a 52-yarder to win a game for them. So, you know, that really gives an advantage because, you know, to make a 52-yarder, that's big because, as we all know, even an extra point, you know, in some instances, and it's just a luxury that you can have someone that you can call on to kick a 40 or 50 yard field goal, and you know, those points add up. And
absolutely do, and it's points. I mean, it seems like you're giving away 3, 6, and 9 points a game when you don't do anything to show up that part of the field. When people talk about we win in all three phases: defense, offense, special teams. You're conceding special teams, at least with the place kicker. You may have a punter. Because I was watching a guy I think Monday night. I had not seen him before. The punter for the New York Jets, from Arkansas Pine Bluff. Australian guy. And so I'm like, so we got, you know, there's HBCU was represented there on Monday night. Interesting, but it's like, you know, they had a strong special teams in the UAPB, if nothing else. They didn't have much of a season, but that guy got a lot of work. And then you're going to talk about, like, your team, Skeegee, had a huge victory this past weekend, whereas I think Kentucky State knocked off, I think, was it Robert Morris last week?
Right.
And then I turn
any
around
victory.
And then I guess it,
Any victory is huge. Any victory is huge because, you know, people forget how tough it is to win anymore. You know, nothing is guaranteed. So we take them where we get them.
Do you want to read anything into Savannah State 60-21 victory over Virginia Lynchburg on Saturday? That they seems like they've been able to put up a lot of points early in the season. In their reentry into the SIAC.
But who have they put them up against?
You know,
they are cupcakes all over college football. You can find them. If you look hard enough, you can find them. And I give them credit. They found someone that can, you know, kind of grease the skids for them and, you know, give them something good to feel about, you know, before they, you know, really start playing, you know, real football teams. You need that. And by the same token, I'm sure Virginia Lynchburg will come across somebody that they can, you know, have their way with.
Manhandle for sure. Those are some of the highlights of HBCU that, like I said, you start really into the teeth of a HBCU season coming up here, and it should be an interesting run toward the season now. People can really start getting excited about their schools, where they're standing are, if they have hope, if they don't have hope. My hope is that everybody out there has an outstanding season. The state's pretty much injury free because it seems like people can't stay healthy in the NFL. Hopefully, they can stay healthy in collegiate football. So again, tonight we want to say thank you to Charlie Neal for his showing up here tonight and just dropping knowledge on us, and we appreciate him. And we look forward to just talking about what's going on this next big weekend of college and pro football and whatever else is going on in sports. So until next time, Roscoe, what do we do?
Let's just try to stay healthy and express yourself.
See y'all next time.